right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy. You know, Sandy, it's puzzling to me, but I guess, you know, you have to look at these kinds of things, as you stated, as, you know, political fodder, because this is what the U.S. ambassador to China had to say. Our government and our national leadership has been very clear to China from the onset that they should not provide material, economic, and military support for Russia in this war, Nicholas Burns, the U.S. ambassador to China, said last week. The Commerce Department said in a written response that while it didn't believe China had sought to systematically evade U.S. export controls on Russia, the department was closely monitoring trade between the countries and will not hesitate to employ our full legal and regulatory tools against the parties that provide support to the Russian military. What can we possibly do, Sandy? I mean, what kind of leverage do we have with a nation like Russia to penalize them? Is that just talk? Is that just bravado?
You mean with China? Well,
yes. With China.
Yeah, I think it's more or less bravado. I think it's it's talk. And you know, the fact is that when you sell to Russia chips and the things, chips have a fairly generic quality to them, and it's probably not easy to prove that a chip you sold was going to be used by the buyer for military. You know, I suppose it would be the case, I suppose, if the company that bought the chip was only in the business of using it for military products. But whatever the case, the United States is not in a very strong position with respect to China, with respect to implementing sanctions that I think sanctioning China in a significant way would be a bit like shooting off toes on your own feet.
Yeah.
So I think you use a gun, but you don't want to shoot the toes on your own feet. And I think that's what would happen in the case of sanctioning China. The mutual sanctioning process would be very, very uncomfortable.
Let me ask you something, Sandy. Don't we in our own nation, have we identified areas where we can ourselves, you know, mine the things necessary that we need as it relates to these chips and whatnot? I mean, there's certainly a lot of open spaces and land in our nation and some of the other areas that we are engaged and involved in. Can't we do more mining and research ourselves?
Well, it's interesting to hear the conservatives who criticize China for instance, subsidizing their economy and creating an unfair trade advantage for China. And in the next breath, they talk about how the United States ought to take control of the chip industry and make sure that the chips are manufactured geographically inside America, so we don't have a problem of having to import them from someone who might become hostile. And so China, I just read today, is in the process of taking control and creating a government-run business that is going to be in the business of buying metals and basically raw materials for the steel industry to try and get a grip on making sure that China has access to, at a low enough cost, the raw materials for making the strategically important steel and aluminum and things that are strategically important. We've talked about the same thing in the United States. And so when China does it, we criticize it as being sort of an unlawful form of meddling in the economy. But yet we talk about doing the same thing. You're talking about doing the same thing. You know, we're talking about
how can we
mine the United States more? How can we find the metals more in the United States? How can we make sure it's manufactured in the United States? Well, the market makes those decisions. You can create incentives for the market to try and make it more likely that they'll make those decisions. You can try and put your thumb on the scale to make it more expensive for them to make the decision to do it otherwise. Like that's called tariffs. It's complicated. And, you know, if you want to have a market process, then the government keeps its hands off. But the United States government doesn't keep its hands off farm market. And we do all kinds of subsidization. And then, however, we jump up and down and cry foul when China does subsidization, which is very much like the kind of things we either do or talk about wanting to do.
You know, Sandy, prior to my conversations with you, I got to tell you, the markets, I never thought much at all about the markets, right? I mean, my entire life, I never saw the world through that prism of the markets and how important they were and how much they impacted and affected our lives. But the more I see that, the more I now spend time looking at those things, it's almost like, man, that's so critical of so critical importance to all of us that as many of us as can should know that these our lives are at the whims sometimes of those markets.
Well, our lives are supported by, facilitated by, our standard of living is nurtured by, and we're dependent on markets where there's choice being made by many, many market participants. And, you know, we spent a long time criticizing back in the Soviet period the central planning that was attempted by the Politburo and in the central government of Russia. And before China broke from the Mao version of communism, the central planning and 5 and 10 year planning of China, we laughed at it because the fact is central planning doesn't work. You know, you can't make the decisions that need to be made by all the participants out there in the marketplace. The million feet of the millipede need to know where each one is to operate. And so, you know, markets are much more effective than central planning, but markets have defects too. You know, it's sort of like a Hobson's choice. What is the best worst thing? What's the best way to do it? And you've got a bunch of choices, all of which have advantages and disadvantages. And I think the world experience has demonstrated that markets that are properly monitored by and regulated by the government are probably the best way for most economic decisions to get made.
You know, and the last thing about it before we go to break is the markets inside of our own nation. In a time where those were the measuring stick, those are no longer the measuring stick, and it's the global market. And whether we want to accept that or not, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, since, you know, after World War II, like I've said frequently, you know, the U.S. market was sort of the world market as far as manufacturing was concerned. And buying and selling of manufactured goods. And slowly over time that evolved. By 1975, we began to have a much more clear-cut impact in the U.S. economy of worldwide competitors, particularly in Europe and Japan. And ever since then, it's become much clearer that the world is a massive marketplace in which the United States is a participant and is not necessarily dominant.
You know, Sandy, we don't hear much about Japan. It's rare now that we hear much about Japan and the markets and those kinds of things. Did they ever come out of their quagmire?
Well, they've never really solved their recession, but Japan remains one of the top five economies in the world, and it is a very big participant in the world economy. It just hasn't been a rapidly growing economy for the past while, but you know it is a very significant participant.
Yeah, you know, I remember when Japan and everybody was talking about Japan like they're talking about China now, and whether it was a bubble that burst or whatever it was, it has never been able to rise back to the lofty heights that it had in those 1980s. And I was just wondering if that had that had changed, and you just clarified that. Anyway, got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.